Manjin, I'm an alcoholic.
Hi.
I want to make sure the microphone is just right because Walt's taking my picture. I got a little emotional when this three new people came up and took their book like a lot of us, because there isn't any place else that I know in the world that they'll take you when you're new and you're beat up and you're a drunken person. And you come in here and they make you feel like you're somebody important. And that's what you've done with me. And that's what the committee has done for me by inviting me to be their speaker today. I have had a little problem since the first time they asked me to be a spiritual speaker. But I guess I'm about as spiritual as I'm ever going to be. And just as much as anybody else that's sitting in this room. Yes, because I am an alcoholic, and if I didn't do a lot of things, I thought of doing them, and I just didn't have the opportunity. But I want to tell you that there's people here today that remember what I used to be like. My daughter is here, and so you know that she's looking at me eyeball to eyeball. So I'm going to tell you what I used to be like. And then there's Gordon sitting back there that remembers what it was like when I came in here. So he remembers what happened. So I can't very much stretch that a little bit. And along the way, there's been a lot of you. And then what I'm like today, I have my grandkids sitting up here looking at me. And then I've got two of my babies, my men babies. My women babies didn't come, but two of my men babies are over here to ready to throw it in my face, whatever I say today. Because I'm meaner to the guys than I am to the gals, because I got a lot of anger that ain't all over. And against them guys that didn't do it my way, so I take it out on the people I sponsor. I'm really grateful to be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, to be sober today, to realize that lack of power has always been my dilemma, and that I never knew what was wrong with me, and that I belong here. I belong here because I am an alcoholic, and I never belonged anywhere as far back as I can remember. I didn't belong into the family I was born into then, and I don't belong to them now. I'm still a leper or a Martian or whatever, but I never was like them guys, and I never wanted to be. I was born and raised not very far from here. You all know where Blythe is, don't you? Over there where the world comes to an end and God sends you when you ask for stuff. You're either too specific or not specific enough. And you know what I'm doing in Blythe is a man. That's the only way that I'd get to Blythe as a man. But don't despair, girls. He's the only toad I ever kissed to turn into a prince. This guy is a great guy. He's not here this morning. He was here all weekend, but he didn't stay to hear me talk. Because you know he can hear me talk anytime he wants. He can hear me talk when he doesn't want. So he says he'd heard that story before, so he went on home. But I tell you what, he is the greatest person, the greatest man I've ever known. We're both dedicated to making me happy. He thinks a woman's place is in the mall. He's a cowboy farmer, and he just never met a Mexican pachuco like me. By the time he came into my life, I was a little settled down now. I may be old on the outside, but I'll tell you, I'm a young person in an old container. I told you that I was born and raised in Orange County in Almedina. Anybody here know, heard of Almedina? In the days that I was raised there, they didn't let any Anglos in, and they weren't too anxious to come in there either. I was born into this family that wasn't ready for me then and isn't ready for me now. In fact, when I ever go see my mother, and she's got company there, she'll pull me aside and she'll say, "Now, don't you be telling them people anything about you being an alcoholic. You're not an alcoholic. You were always that way." And when I tell her a little bit of the stuff that happened to me while I was drinking, not anything near what I tell you guys, her eyes will get real big and she'll say, well, if you're an alcoholic, you don't get it from my side of the family. The other side didn't claim me either. So I was born when they kept the mothers in the hospital a whole week. That was a long time ago. And when they came home with this baby, they still didn't have a name for me. And the reason for that is because my daddy wanted to name me after his girlfriend, and my mother's narrow-minded. I had an older sister that was perfect. You know the type I'm talking about. They always told her what to do, and she always did it right. And she screwed it up for me because I never knew how to be good. I never remembered how to be good until after I was bad. And then it was too late. They were always whipping on me for being bad. I didn't know I was a better child. I wished I'd have known I was a better child. I thought that's the price you pay for not knowing how to be good. I'd have held it against them guys forever. I did anyway, most of the things, but not the batterings. They were divorced when I was 7. And my mother would say things to me like, you're just like your father. And I knew what her opinion was of him. She didn't like him too well. So she'd send me to the nuns too, so they could teach me to be a lady. And I thought what the nuns was a lady wasn't appealing to me then, and it isn't appealing to me now. In fact, it was really boring. I liked excitement. I may not have thought of doing something, but as soon as they said, thou shalt not, I had an overwhelming desire to do it. I just could not get it out of my mind till I did it. And then I could relax a little bit. Somebody dared me, and I raised the nun's skirt, see what she wore under all them clothes. I'm curious. And so they 86 me from catechism. And the next day when I got to school, all the kids thought I was terrific. God, I'll tell you what, I loved all that attention, and I still do. Obviously, I wouldn't be up here acting like a jackass. You'd hee-hawing all over the place. But I'll tell you what, it seems to me that I was born with an emptiness in my soul, a yearning, a longing to be loved, to be wanted, to be accepted, to fit in someplace. The overwhelming emotion of my life, as far back as I can remember, is holding myself and rocking myself with this agony inside that all I could do was wail like a wounded animal. I was always so hungry for love, I'd have given my heart to anybody that would have taken it. And as a child, I wanted my mother's love and approval so desperately, and I didn't know what was wrong with me. I just know that something's terribly wrong with me that's not wrong with other people. I don't know what it is. If I could only find what was wrong with me, I would fix it. You see, I always try to fix myself. And it never worked. So when I got all that attention, it filled up some of them empty places. I'm one that believes that I always had the pilot lit. All I ever needed was the fuel. I could never live inside of my body. I always was so sensitive, so near tears. My feelings were always getting hurt, and I always wanted so hungry for love and approval. Things were happening in my home that ought not to happen, and now it's coming out. I'm so glad that we're talking more about sexual abuse in our homes, because it took me a long time to be able to have the freedom to even acknowledge that those things happened to me. I went to my mother with it, and I was told that I lied. Of course, I just ate my heart out. I felt abandoned, and that there was nobody ever there for me. Nobody was ever there for me till I came to you. Today I know that it took every minute and every inch of everything I experienced to get here. Today I can tell you that I'm grateful that those people were not there for me. Because if they had been there for me, I'd still be there getting whatever half measures I would be getting there. It wasn't until I came to you just bankrupt in all departments that I was able to be open enough to get what you had to teach me. But it was a lot of miles in between that time and here, and light years away from where I'm at today. It got to the place that I couldn't live there anymore. And I started always looking for answers. I always looked for answers. I knew that when I ran off to be with my daddy, everything was going to be different and everything was going to be better over there. And I ran off as a child. I was 12 years old. And I didn't feel like a child at that time. I felt like I was old enough to do whatever I needed to do. And when I got to my daddy, he wasn't there either. First of all, he was over in the San Fernando Valley where he'd taken up light housekeeping with a lady with 8 kids. So, you know, he had his hands full over there trying to impress people that don't care. But anyway, he used to take people up north to pick grapes and prunes, and we were fruit pickers. In case you didn't know, I'm a Mexican. Huh? And God made 2 kinds of Mexicans, as fruit pickers and non-fruit pickers. They tried to make a fruit picker out of me, and it didn't take. There's one thing that I've never been addicted to, and that's work. I don't think I'm in any danger of getting addicted to that. I've gotten addicted to a lot of strange things, and work ain't one of them. And we stayed beyond the season with the Gallo brothers. And I'll tell you what did take. They gave my dad a case of sherry wine, and somebody must have said, "Thou shalt not." I had a big water glass of that sucker. I don't know about you guys. I didn't just all of a sudden fit in. Man, when they went down, and it went boom. And right away it did what it's supposed to do. I mean, all over my body. Huh? It's just too bad something that good has to be wasted on social drinkers that don't appreciate it. Jesus. Isn't that a shame? Man, I want anything gonna make me feel that good. You know I want more. I never have that button that says enough. I got the one that says more. If I feel good now, any minute now, I'm gonna feel better. It couldn't get any better by any minute now. I'm going to. Then it's the next day. I don't know what happened. Why is it that way that you just try to get to that place and just stay there? That's all. You might have stayed there that way. I'd never come to you guys. Why should I? That's all I was looking for. Is that place where you just get to it about 2 seconds before you come to where your hair is stuck to your face. I'm from the Pachuco days. You know we got the big hairdos? Yeah, when that sucker comes over your face, you know you got some hair. You don't know whether it's day or night, you got a part in it. You don't know what happened. You know something happened, but you don't know, because your clothes are torn. And you know that something happened. You don't know what happened, but you don't want to know what happened, but you want to know what happened. You start trying to read people's minds. Have you ever noticed how good you get at reading minds the next day? I look at their face. I know they know. And when I look at their face and I'm looking for something, I always see it. I don't know how you interpret it, but I knew I did something terrible. And I feel dirty. And I feel ashamed. I had a sense of being dirty and being ashamed that it went all the way through me. And I look at the people's faces and I knew that what I had done was absolutely not only immoral, but was disgusting. I don't know what it was. But that was my opinion of me. It always was my opinion of me. It seemed to me that I had spent a lifetime trying to defend what I was to myself. You see, and I covered it up because I have to survive. I covered it up the only way that I knew. I either laughed it off as if I didn't care about it, or I'd have to act as if they told me that I'd beat them up. Because it's the only way I ever handled anything that was embarrassing, anything that I was ashamed of. I either clowned it away, or I tried to beat it away and scare people about it. And people never knew how I was going to be, and neither did I. Shortly thereafter, I came back to my mother's because I wasn't over at my dad's either. When I got back, they didn't let me come home. I was just a child. I was 13 years old. My grandkids, I got one of my grandbabies here that's older than that. And I looked at her and I look at them little girls today and I was never that young. I always felt old, unwanted, used up, and unnecessary. And I had a fist, not the size of my fist, on my throat where I wanted my mother to put her arms around me and tell me that she loved me. I couldn't reach out for that which I needed so desperately. I just said, I don't care. I don't didn't give a damn, and I did care. We that built them walls, it always keeps them people out, but there was always that feeling of loneliness deep down inside of me, that always needing so much to be loved, to be wanted, and to be necessary to somebody, and feeling there was never ever going to be anybody for me if they knew who I was. I started doing a lot of the things that the kids are doing today, but I was born about 30 years before my time. I was doing it when it was not socially acceptable. Where there was just me and the guys doing it. I never liked the girls very much. I always liked the guys a lot. And they liked me, too. And I started living here and there with friends. We didn't live out in the streets then. We just lived with girlfriends and friends of our parents for a short time. I always lived someplace sometime for a short time. Also, it was on this time that I discovered the Mexican parties. I don't know if Anglos have the same kind of parties. I never hung around with any of you guys till I got sober. And now I come to forget sometimes I'm a Mexican. I look around at all of you and sometimes I'm around a bunch of Mexicans. I said, for God's sakes, well, look at all them Mexicans there. I guess I used to be a Mexican. Now I'm just an alcoholic. It don't matter what I am today. But at that time, we used to have them parties that last a whole weekend. You know the type where you get drunk several times? The cops come over several times. And this is the time I discovered the booze and the boys and the cha-cha-cha. God, did I discover the booze and the boys and the cha-cha-cha. Also, I was one of the original topless, bottomless dancers in them parties. I don't even remember it. I don't even get paid for it. And you know, the girls always want to tell you the next day what you did. So I used to beat them up and then they didn't tell me because I don't want to know because I can't stop it. People would say to me, why do you get so drunk? I didn't know when I got so drunk. All I wanted to do was have fun and feel great. That's all I wanted. And they'd say, why don't you drink some buttermilk or olive oil before you drink? All it did was ruin my clothes when I threw up, you know. It just. I was popular with the boys till I threw up. Then I wasn't very popular. I'd thrown up on some neat guys. Never saw them again. I also don't know how to work. I'm just a child. I do babysitting and live. People take care of me. But I take up burglary. I'm not a bad person. Just seemed to be a good idea at the time. I was really surprised when the state of California discovered me. They didn't understand that my case was different. They took me before the judge, and there sits my mother and all them various sundry purple-lipped little people, not blue-lipped because they're Mexicans. They took purple pills, and they sat there looking at me. Well, you know, I'm slick, hip, and cool. With my big hair, they take me before a judge. It says, well, young lady, what do you think we ought to do with you? Well, I slide down on my chair. I said, well, you're the judge. You ought to know, man. That's the wrong person to have that kind of an attitude with. He sent me out to do a little bit of time for the state of California. I don't know how to be good there either. So I do 13 months. I'm only supposed to be there 9 months. Geez, you know, I thought I'd be the only gray-haired little old lady in the girls' reformatory. When they finally opened the doors and let me out, I took my first inventory. I'm one that always believes in living in the answer instead of the problem. I think it's also called scheming. And I don't have a job, I don't have an education, don't have any money, don't have a home, and I'm thinking, what an order, I can't go through with that. So I'm starting to think, I thought I'd better go out and find me a husband. Because God knows I need somebody to take care of me. I went out looking for a husband in places that husbands are not to be looked for. And unfortunately for both of us, I found one. I've been apologizing to my kids ever since for the bad genes that have been passed on. There's a certain kind of man that always caught my attention. You know, they got the big muscles and they wear them little t-shirts. They got tattoos on each arm. Huh? Mother. Born to lose. They walk with a little slouch, you know. They got their hair all greased back and a lot of curly, dark, shiny hair. Huh? They got all teeth. You know, big old smiles, shiny eyes. They look at you and say, what's happening, baby? What you just gives me the chills today. I used to think that look was charisma. Today I know it to be psychosis. They're wild and exciting, huh? Don't give me none of them square farmer cowboy types. Let me have one of those. If you tame you one of those, you got you somebody. Well, my sponsor says you can't make chicken salad out of chicken shit, but I'll tell you, I'll try. If I say anything that isn't very spiritual, it probably comes from my sponsor. I can say all that stuff because she ain't here this morning. She was supposed to be here, but I got called away to go talk in Minnesota. So I can say anything I want now. Well, 3 months later, we were pregnant, and I was married, this guy and I. And he had an idea of what a good Mexican wife should be, and I had an idea of what a good Mexican husband should be, and never the twain shall meet. And I got the scars to prove it, and he's got the scars to prove it. And we were really ready for parenthood. I don't know. He doesn't want me to drink. He starts hearing all them stories about me. It's all right. I want to be a good Mexican wife and don't drink either. So he introduces me to little white pills with crosses on them. I don't know what they are, but I sure knew what they did to me. I had one eyeball over there and one over there, and I'd make baby clothes all night long. He was a mainline heroin user, and you just don't live happily ever after with one of those. Very exciting, but not very happy. And I'll tell you what, it started out as fun, as exciting, and there ain't nothing like making baby clothes all night long. You put them together, tearing apart, trying to get just right. Every try to get just right, got to get it. Any minute now it's going to be just right. 10 hours later, any minute now it's going to be just right. Well, after 3 days of this and 3 nights, and you say, for God's sakes, if I can only sleep. God, if I could only, you know, your body's so tired, but your mind says, wake up, let's get going. Any minute now, we're going to be just right. And it started out as exciting, and it started out as a fountain of youth. If I'd have drank an 8 pills the way I did those days, I'd have never come to Alcoholics Anonymous. And it promised me so much. Any minute now, it was going to be great. And one day at a time, I went into literal hell, because our disease is a liar. It promised me so much, and all it delivered was hell. But a lot of things happened in between there. I had my baby, and she's sitting here as a member of Alcoholics Anonymous today. And I had my baby, and when they put my baby in my arms, my heart sang, because I felt like finally, somebody belonged to me. You see, by the time I had my baby, I knew this man didn't want to be married, and I thought he didn't want to be married to me. I always took the responsibility, this self-centeredness, and always took the responsibility for anything bad that happened to me. And so when they put that baby in my arms, she inspired feelings within me that nobody ever has before or since. I would sit by the hour and watch and love my baby. I knew she was mine. And nobody could take her away from me. I promised my baby I would never beat her, abandon her, discard her, mistreat her as I had been. And I meant it with every fiber of my being. If I could have been good for anybody, it would have been for my baby. I loved her so much. But I'm a child in a woman's body, and I don't know what is wrong with me. I just know that whatever I try, sooner or later, it turns to nothing. Sooner or later, it turns to ashes. And I took that baby and her sister to places that children should not be taken. I don't know what's wrong with me. Way down inside of me, there was always a spark of the woman that I am today that I never killed, no matter what I put inside of me, no matter what happened to me on the outside. But I thought there was a monster that lived within me. I took that baby and her sister to the places that children should not be taken. They got treated the way children should not be taken. because I'm an alcoholic and I'm a woman alcoholic. And when I drink, I have absolutely no choices and no rights. When I drink, I'm going to do what's in front of me to do because it's there to do. I don't know why I do those things. I just do them. I never think about prices. I never think about tomorrow. I just know about the immediate gratification because I can't stand life otherwise. I can't stand it without something inside of me, something that make life smoother because I can't stand myself. After the second baby was born, I had the first one, and a year later, almost to the date, here comes another one. Jesus, I need a mother. And here all the responsibility choked me. I couldn't stand the responsibility. I left her daddy because he wasn't straightening up, and I thought I was getting old. And I went out looking for another husband, and I still looked for husbands in places that husbands are not to be looked for. And I always fell in love. You know, when I fall in love all over my body. Every inch of me falls in love forever. I can't remember the names of some of the men I've fallen in love with forever. Huh? This time is going to be different. I don't know what happens. I kiss perfectly good guys and they turn around, kiss them and turn into toads. I don't know what I do to them. This is a time when I became an unprotected bar drinking female. I know the feeling of degradation and self-loathing that a woman goes through when she's an unprotected bar drinker. I know what happens to be talked to in ways you don't want to be talked to and touched in places you don't want to be touched and wind up with people you don't want to be with. But you do it anyway. You don't know why it's doing what's happening, but it's happening anyway. And I don't want anybody to know. I have so many secrets, and I don't want anybody to know. After 5 years of the feeling of degradation and self-loathing, I'm so tired. And my husband, there was someplace in Texas getting the cure, writes back to me, and he says, "Babes, this time it's going to be different." And he sends pictures home, and he's got the muscles and the tattoos and the smile, and I think it was, somebody said it this weekend, you know, he came over and he didn't want me to drink, and I laugh in his face, and he's a pachuco dude, don't want me to laugh at him, and so he knifes me, and I carry a gun, gonna shoot him, and a week later he calls me up and tells me he's sorry, so we ran off and got married, and that seemed normal to me. And again, we moved to Mira Loma. The people have said that Blythe is the armpit of California. But I think for me, Mira Loma is another part of the anatomy that is unmentionable. And it's not very far from here. We bought a little ranch with the chickens and the turkeys and the horses, and we were going to be farmers, his Dauphin and I. I even married him in the Catholic Church, and that's going to any length for a Catholic, especially since he was a Methodist. You know, I was going to make this work with this guy no matter what, even if he didn't want it was going to work. And we even joined the PTA. I mean, we're going to be like everybody else. I'm a firm believer you can place me in the best of circumstances, but sooner or later I have to create whatever is inside of me, because I can't be the way them people want me to be, not for long anyway. Now, I can change myself in any way you want me to be for a short time, but I don't know who I am. I just know that I just need to fool you for a little while. But it isn't long before that life gets to be too tight. He makes a pass at my neighbor. I go beat up the neighbor. I didn't know that when you get to the PTA and all that stuff, you don't beat up the neighbors. I always beat up everybody. And my drinking changed. The best thing I can say about Mira Loma, it's in the middle of four wineries and close to Cucamonga. That's the best part about that. And my drinking changed. Where before I had been a party girl, I then became a bedroom drinker. I know about shutting down your shades. I know about telling your kids that you're sick and you go to bed and you drink around the clock. And everybody is terrified in my house. Everybody's terrified to make any noise, because if they make any noise, the monster comes to. And when the monster comes to, she starts screaming and yelling, and then she starts hitting. And once I start hitting, I start hit and hit and hit, and I don't stop, and I can't stop. And there's screams and there's yells there, and there's two little girls that are always battered and have the big eyes, you see. And I used to think, for God's sakes, when somebody take these little girls and give them a normal life, because I knew I couldn't. I don't know what is wrong with me, but I know I can't be the way I want to be. I always knew how to be. I just never knew how to be that. So I didn't come here by myself. I brought two little girls, two innocent little girls, that I got to experience so much horror that it's a wonder that any of us have any kind of sanity left. I couldn't stand it anymore. I got so tired of trying. I started praying. I started reading the Bible. I started going to churches. I went to some churches where they'd say, anybody want to be saved, come right on up here. I was the first one over there to get saved, and they always saved me, and it always took until I walked out of there. And then I'd get home, and I wasn't saved after all. And they'd sprinkle me. I've been sprinkled, dunked, and little flowers over me, and all the other stuff to get saved, and nothing would take for long. Because, you see, I would blame me and say there was something wrong with me. I didn't know it's called alcoholism. And I got so tired, I thought, I'm just going to die. I just can't stand it. So I quit taking sleeping pills and saved my sleeping pills. And when I thought I had enough, I took all of them. Before that, I went and took a bath. I wasn't taking very many baths. Made sure my house was kind of clean, and all the dirty underwear and the one that got holes in them, you throw them away. And you just get it. Just in case you die, they won't know how you lived. I waited until this man was home, because I couldn't stand for them little girls to find me dead. So he was sitting watching television, and I told him I was going to kill myself. He says, okay. And he went back to watching television. We had a slight communication problem. We just didn't care. And I died that night. I died. I slept for 2 days and two nights. And when I came to, I was enraged to be alive. Because I was so tired. I couldn't drink and I couldn't be sober. And I couldn't live and I couldn't even die. I came to and it's got to be the loneliest day of my life, where I had no place to turn, where this man was disgusted because I was alive and I was enraged to be alive and I didn't know where to turn. Today I looked upon that day and I realized that my higher power has always had his hand upon my life. Always had. Even when I wasn't there and I wasn't aware, he had his hand upon my life. Because that very day, there's a knock on the door, a lady from the PTA. If there's somebody I didn't want to see, it's a lady from the PTA. Now, I'm a Mexican that comes from Barrios, and I don't even know any Anglos till I move over to Okietown in Mariloma. And she's from the dairy people. You know them people that got them big dairies and some houses somebody else cleaned. And, you know, when you've been sleeping in your own field for 2 days and two nights, you don't smell very pretty. And here comes this lady with this Mrs. Clean look about her. Hi. And she takes one look at me, and a moment of weakness, I let her in, and she wants to know what's wrong with me, and I tell her my tale of woe. I tell her about this SOB and how he done me wrong. And, you know, she stayed with me and cleaned me up, this lady. And somehow in the conversation, she asked me if I ever heard of Al-Anon, and I'd never heard of Al-Anon. And I got the idea that if I went there, he would straighten up. I always had a feeling like if he would straighten up and take care of me in the manner I'd like to become accustomed to, I would be all right. And so she took me to Al-Anon, and somehow I didn't fit in Al-Anon. I felt a little bit like a whore would in a nunnery. There was absolutely no identification between me and them square broads. But, you know, I never fit in anywhere anyway. And today I know that they saved my life. At that time, I just used to go and smile at them. You know, I had heard I had a beautiful smile someplace along the line, so I used to flash them that, the lights are on, nobody home, look. You know, I came around Al-Anon for a while, and I guess after a while I heard the word release. I went home and told him how I was going to release him, and so he used to sleep with his clothes on and a knife under the pillow. And I'd sit in a corner with a big black coat on and watch him. When he'd be a dozing off, I'd go take a little peek at him. He'd go, oh! I just love that. One day I came home and he was gone. He took everything with him. He wasn't planning on coming back. And that's the way that had to be. Because though that life was unbearable, it was familiar. And fear has always been the compromiser of my life. I'd always stayed there and said, do anything you want to me, just don't leave me. The fear of abandonment has been plaguing me. From day one in my life, it seemed, until long after I come to you, where I would just do anything just not to be alone, you see. But you took me under your wing, and you took me. The same lady took me in an AA meeting, and I'm figuring out that the Melanons got together and kicked me out of Al-Anon, and were going to send me over to their husbands who they didn't like. And so this lady is going to take me to the young people's meeting in Pomona in August of 1964. And as we walk through that old Alano club, through the kitchen where all the Melanons were, I ain't looking at their faces because I know that look in their faces. I just look at my feet like I always did. I walked into the young people's meeting in Pomona in August of 1964, and I listened to the sounds of Alcoholics Anonymous. I listened to that belly laughter, that smile that reaches the soul, that shine in the eyes, and that happy talk. And those are the sounds of Alcoholics Anonymous. The very first thing that attracted me to you was the music of Alcoholics Anonymous. I never heard the words, but I heard the music, you see. I often wondered, what is it and where does it come from? And it came to me one day, and I consider it a spiritual experience when I realized that that which happens in these rooms, we bring it with us, every one of us. These are just empty rooms. We bring it with us. And it intermingles and becomes a group conscience, a higher power. You call it what you want. But there is a dynamic something that happens when you and I come together that never happens anyplace else that I've ever been before or since, you see. And I hungered for it, and I wanted it. I just thought, it's too bad I'm not an alcoholic. If there's another disease for the name for the disease that you and I have, it's called I Ain't Got It. Now, I knew I was weird and different and three steps ahead of the man with a butterfly net. I don't know why it was much more socially acceptable to be nuts, but it was. I just knew that for me, alcohol had been an answer, you see. It had just quit being an answer because I had lost the combination. You know, if you put a lot of junk in there to try to control your alcoholism, too. When you switch from booze to pills to wine to, you know, pretty soon you'd run out of combinations if you can only find the right combination one more time. If anything works one more time, you know that's where the answer is. I want instant relief. I don't know there's answer here. I just know you put your arm around me and you said, keep coming back. Do you know what that feels like? And I know some of you do. When you're used to people saying, keep on going, weirdo. Huh? What a disappointment it was to me when I found out you were telling that to everybody. But newcomer, I just sat back there and I let it wash over my soul and I hungered for what them people had. I looked around and at all them single, good-looking young guys. And I said, I'm going to give me one of those. And I did. He was the sickest one there. It had to be. Huh? I got radar. But it takes what it takes, and that's what it takes for me. You see, sometimes in my arrogance, and I want to say, well, they ain't ready. Or there's only one way to come in here, and that's with sincerity. Why aren't they sincere like I was? I guess that's one of the things I get when I get up here to talk, is I remember how sincere I was. I looked at all them sober, single, good-looking young guys, and I wanted me one of them. Because it was too easy. It was easier for them to do it for me, because I don't know how to do it. I don't know what it was, but I don't know how to do it. I don't know how to live and be happy at the same time. For 10 months, I came around as a visitor. I got a little feeling a little uncomfortable along the way because I thought I might be a little alcoholic. Well, it was I started identifying with you. I said, no, something like potential. And I get a little guilty and stop drinking and double up on the Miltons and Benzedrine. And this guy wanted to get rid of me, and I'm not easy to get rid of because I didn't have a backup. You always got to have a backup, you know. Got to have the plan A, B, C, D, and E. And so I'm always looking like radar, looking, just looking. And So I moved to Pomona to be closer to the action because it's too far for me driving back and forth in my clunker. So I walk into a room one day, and there's a cute little boy talking. He just got out of YTS. He had big blue eyes, big gigantic blue eyes, and blonde hair. And he's talking. And I have an affinity for blue eyes and blonde hair. Today it's blue eyes and gray hair because time marches on. And this guy's saying he don't have a girlfriend, he don't have a surfboard, he don't have a car. And I think to myself, come here, little boy, I'll take care of you. And I did. And he thought a Mack truck hit him. He don't know what hit him. But after that relationship was over, he decided to become a minister, and I like to think that somehow, in my small way, I have pushed him over to God. I don't like women, and I don't trust men, and that don't leave you much. And I didn't know what I was going through. It's called withdrawals. You never told me anything about withdrawals. I never heard anything about withdrawals. All I heard is you keep coming back and live happily ever after, especially with this cute young thing. I'll tell you what. He was the first man that had ever been kind to me. He was the first man that had ever been gentle with me. And everywhere that he went, he wanted to take me with him. And we walked together, this man and I, for 6.5 years with a lot of stuff that happened in between. I am grateful today that God sent that gentle young man into my life at a time that I was so vulnerable. I didn't know what you had here. I didn't know what I had to go through to get what you had. I just knew that I couldn't stand it. I had never been able to stand life without anything. And I walked the streets without any skin on. I had a lot of trouble in the first 5 years of my sobriety with depression and violence. And my children were not treated any different for the longest time because I never knew and I resented the role of motherhood. But you see, I know today that you and I do not come together by accident. I truly believe that we come together by divine appointment. And yet every relationship has its beginning and its parting. That's not to say that I enjoy partings. I don't. But I know when you go on your way, you take a little bit of me with you. And you leave a little bit of you behind. And we're never the same because our lives have touched. I don't know what you're talking about. I don't know about God. I had fallen away and didn't trust God for the longest time all my life. But I understood that about this man. And I did everything I could to stay with him because I plug in with my need. And my need is tremendous. And I'm a taker. I'm not a giver. I don't know how to give. You've taught me to give. When I came here, all I had was a fearful, disillusioned, despairing woman. Another drunk in me. It was not my worst drunk, because when he got drunk, so did I. And though it was not my worst drunk, it was my most hopeless one. I felt I had tried Alcoholics Anonymous, and it worked for you, but my case was different. I was uglier, dirtier, and untreatable. They say that as a twig is bent, so grows the tree, and I thought I was too hopeless for that. But you see, in Alcoholics Anonymous, out of that bent, of that narrowed a tree, and grows the new branch, and that happened to me. What happened to me is a man named Carson, after 2 weeks of again going right back, I drank all the fun out of those bottles. I had to go out and remove all doubt. I had to go out and know that the answers were no longer in a bottle. I had to go out and know that there's only despair and destruction in that world for me. There isn't anything out there. I came back desperate with no place to turn. A man named Carson brought me back on a rainy Wednesday night in December. And Carson was the type of a man that they always said always exploited young women in alcohol, new women in Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't know about that, but Carson never said anything that was out of line for me. But I know that he saved my life because he brought me back. I don't know that I come on my own steam. I just know that I was so embarrassed that you would know what a failure I am. You see, me that had so many secrets could no longer keep those things from you. And you said, you put your arm around me, and you said, we're glad you're back. The miracle for me is not that I've come to Alcoholics Anonymous, because hundreds and hundreds and thousands of people come back and don't stay. The miracle for me is that I am still here. And that last December the 22nd, I celebrated my 23rd birthday. That is the miracle for me. And the victory is not mine. That is the miracle. And the victory is not mine. The victory belongs to us. Because my book says that lack of power is my dilemma. That the whole essence of this book is to enable me to find a power greater than myself that will help me to solve my problems. And the whole reason for my sobriety, my book tells me, is to be a maximum service to God and to my fellow man. I don't know if I've got no way of changing me. I just know that if I tell my higher power, here I am, use me. That I do like my dearest teacher, Johnny H. says, get up, suit up, and show up. Show up for life, that my higher power will use me. It wasn't that way for me in the beginning. I came back absolutely terrified, didn't know if I could have what you had. First of all, you read stuff that says, rarely have we seen a person fail. I know when they say rarely, somebody ain't going to make it. They say they are such unfortunates, they are not at fault, they seem to have been born that way. I thought, I'm screwed, I knew I was born that way. My mother will tell you I was born that way. And who would know better than one's mother? But a little further on down it says, and there are those that have grave emotional and mental disorders. I am so grateful that I have that in there. That's a catch-all for all of us that think our case is different. I used to, being a purple-lipped little old-timer now, I've looked to people that identified with, I'm an alcoholic and a something else. I always think, who gives a shit? You know, who cares? If you're an alcoholic, that's it. But I understand today that what you're really saying is, my case is different. I need a little special treatment here. This is too simple. Yeah, I always thought that. I always read the white parts in the big book. I forgot to read the black parts. I didn't know. First of all, I don't know how to read the book. They say, read the book. You go home, read the book. It bounces off. You see? But a little further on down, it says many of them do recovery if they have the capacity to be honest. Now, I'm not presumptuous to tell you that I have the capacity to be honest. I really don't know the difference between right and wrong. If I want to do something bad enough, I can go home and pray about it and meditate about it, and especially if it's a guy, pray about it and meditate about it. And sooner or later, God and I'll decide it's His will for me. You just try it long enough. But God sends people into our life that ruin this stuff. They're called sponsors. My sponsor is Mary Reagan, and I always say her name. She don't care who knew she was drinking, so naturally today she don't care who knows she's sober. And that's the way I am today. She's of the fascist variety sponsor, and she'll got a lot of sympathy for me. So I just get even at the people I sponsor. She says things to me like, Angie, you don't have to sit in your own shit just because it's warm. If things are really trying, and you know how you go through those days where, and she'll ask me, who's not doing it your way today? What's not going your way today? You know what makes me mad is that she's always right. But she wasn't my sponsor in the beginning. I don't have any sponsor. The group's my sponsor, because I don't like them women any more than I did when I was drinking. First of all, there's women that got a lot of time, and they look at you. I don't want them looking at me, because they're seeing something I don't want them to see. I don't know what it is, but I just don't want them to see it anyway. And the women that don't have much time, I got this cute young thing who's 11 years younger than I, he's sweet. I don't want him to look at that young gal over there because he's going to compare, and I ain't going to come up with the head one here. So I just say, let's go this way, honey. But that leaves the guys, and I told you, the guys were always easy for me. I don't care how much time they had. You just smile at them, and they pat you in the head and the rear or wherever they want to put it. I tell you, in the beginning, they all know more than me. God, it was a step up for me. I was proud to be an alcoholic. I don't know about grateful, I was proud for being an alcoholic from some of the stuff I thought was wrong with me. Then I know more than some of them. The day came when I hated a member of alcoholics. I don't know if I hated. I never knew anything about resentments. I knew about love. I think it's love. Anyway, love. It feels like love. and hate. I don't know about resentments or liking. I never had anything in between. I never lived in the gray areas. I always lived in either the white or the black, one way or the other. And I don't have a sponsor. I had one that volunteered to be my sponsor, but she was just short-term sponsor because she told me stuff I didn't want to hear. So I gave up the sponsor. It's easier to do, give up the sponsor, do some of the stuff she's telling me to do. And so I went to some of these old-timers. I hated this guy because he talked funny. He smoked, and I hated the way he walked, the way he talked, the way he smoked, the way he breathed, everything about him, and I knew I hated him because I watched him diligently. Yeah. You walk into a room and you ain't happy till you see me. Where is he? There he is. I went to a meeting every night because he told me I should go every night. It was a relief because if I didn't go to a meeting, I'd have to be home with me and them kids. So I'd go to a meeting every night, and then on the way home, I'd get scared. I think I left him alone, and there'd be blood splattered all over the wall. I never had any anticipation of anything going to happen. I was at anticipation of gory things always happening because I thought that was all I had that was going to come to me because sooner or later I'd get mine. And one day I heard you say that resentments are the number one offender for the alcoholic. They're fatal, and they'll go out and get drunk. And you know, I'd have done anything you told me to do, even though it wasn't going to work. I was going to try it because I was scared that you would find out as a fraud and make me leave here. Find here to say, you know what? You may think you're an alcoholic, but you're not. There's something else wrong with you. You get out of here. God, what a relief it was to me when I found out nobody could push me out of here except me. Yeah, oh God, what a relief that is. So you just, newcomer, you just hang on to your chair. Nobody can make you get out of here except your worst enemy, your head. That will make you get out of here soon. But it didn't me, you see. I went to some of them old guys and I asked them, how do you get over resentment? I made sure I had my smile on my face. And they say, turn it over easy, does it, this too shall pass one day at a time, go home with a bookie, coming back and don't drink. So I'd go home and do all this neat stuff, come back the next night and I didn't take, so I'd go to somebody else. And again, I'd say, how do you get over resentments? And again, they'd say, turn it over easy, does it, this too shall pass one day at a time, go home with a book, keep coming back and don't drink. After a while, I got the message. You don't know the answer either. I just keep doing it so you won't ask me to leave here. Because I feel good when I'm with you. It's only when I'm with you that got any happiness, any joy inside of me. Only when I'm with you, I'm laughing and I'm joyful and I'm free. When I leave those meetings and I go to my home, that old insanity, that old fear, that old loneliness comes back, you see. That man was only able to take it away for a little while. I know that things and a love affair would make that madness go away for a little while. Everything that's new and exciting makes that go away for a little while. But once that newness wears off, all that madness comes back. And you see, I felt good when I was with you. And so I tried what you tried because I didn't have any better ideas. I'm glad I didn't have any better ideas. I didn't know you could leave a meeting early. I didn't know you could come to a meeting late. I just did what you told me to the best of my abilities. I never thought it was enough. I didn't think it was the best of my abilities to know. I know I was operating way beyond my capacity. And so the day came when this man had a tragedy in his life, and he's starting to cry when he's talking. And I'm thinking, Jesus, how embarrassing, he's crying. Doesn't he know only women and sissies cry? Have you ever heard of John Wayne or Pancho Villa, Emiliano Zapata? He's crying. I thought it was so embarrassing. After the meeting, everybody went and put their arm around him. I went and put my arm around him. I didn't want you to know I was only the dog among you. And I gave him one of those stiff arm hugs, you know, one of those. And he put his head on my shoulder and started to sob. And I stayed here. Listen to me, newcomer. I stayed here long enough to have the miracle happen to me. And it happens to every one of us that are in rooms like this, or we wouldn't be here still. You see, I'm still here in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I never do. Today, I don't do anything I don't want to do. And I'm here in Alcoholics Anonymous because it has continued to sustain and fill my soul with whatever it is that happens in these rooms. And something happened, and all that anger, all that resentment melted away as if it had never been. And I felt the pain in me reached out and touched the pain in him. And therefore, the other side of the coin, the love in me reached out and touched the love in him. And that was the miracle that happened to me. My first miracle that I could almost palpitate in Alcoholics Anonymous when one drunk caring for another. This isn't the way it continued to be. I still was in a lot of bondage. I was always afraid that I had ruined my children forever. I was always afraid to live alone. And I was able to turn a semblance of my life over to the care of my higher power. But the day came when I was forced to turn all of me into this program. What happened is my children started drinking and taking drugs, and I prayed, God, spare my babies, and he didn't spare my babies. I came home one day, they were so loaded, we had a big fight, and they ran off. I hit them, and they hit me back, and they ran off, and I went into a terrible depression. My daughter, who's sitting here tonight, a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous, came home one day with a burn the size of a silver dollar in her chest where people had been putting cigarettes out on, and I died inside. All I wanted to do was have somebody to love me and take care of me. A home where I could be a good mother, and it had gone between my fingers. It wasn't there either. I had a nervous breakdown. Again, I contemplated an attempted suicide. That young man went and took me to the psycho ward, went home, packed his clothes, and left. And everything that I ever feared would happen to me happened. I was in that psycho ward, and I just wanted to die. The thought of drinking never occurred. I just wanted to die. And you came around me at that time. I felt so devastated. It is from the women in Alcoholics Anonymous that came around me at that time that I was finally able to share all the secrets of my heart with you. See, I got sober over there with the women in Pomona in Upland. In those days, all they were toast burners. And I didn't identify much with the toast burners. I used to hang around with a lady from Ontario called Big Edna. And she's the only one that had ever been worse than me. And so I hung around with Edna for the longest time. You see, it was during that time when I was so devastated that I finally found out that I was not any different than you. Maybe I drank in bars and felt so dirty there. And you drank in your kitchen and felt so dirty there. And in Alcoholics Anonymous, we learned to be each other's sisters and each other's mamas. You have mothered me. The women in Alcoholics Anonymous have helped to heal my soul, my dirty soul that I felt was unnatural. You have helped to heal it. It is from the men in Alcoholics Anonymous that have treated me like a lady that I've learned to be a lady. But I'll tell you what happened to me. I made peace with my higher power. I said, okay, God, I'm never going to be happy again. All you ever want me to do is work with the sick women drunks. Let them puke on me. I moved away to Orange County, back to where I had started from, and I started attending a lot of meetings, and I threw myself completely into this program without any reservation, knowing I'd never be happy again. I don't know about your higher power, but mine has a weird sense of humor. When I want something so bad, oh God, 10 Hail Marys, 10 Our Fathers, they don't come. As soon as you say, ah, screw them, here it comes. I don't know why it happens that way. When I got to the other side, I got to the other side where I wanted to put a shotgun about 2 inches from his belly and watch all the gore go all over, running down on the freeway back and forth. My higher power assures me they don't lock you up for being crazy, only for acting crazy. She also reminds me that if God removes all my character defects, I'll disappear. So, the only thing that has happened to me with time is I've gotten comfortable and accepting a lot of stuff I don't like about me. But when I got to the other side, I touched a power, and I touched a strength that was way down inside of me. Where my cry had always been, do anything you want with me, just don't leave me. I found out that after all that's said and done, there's only you and me, God, anyway. That which I demanded from them, they never had to give. I am one of those ladies that had to learn to live alone, to find out the difference between being alone and having solitude. I also found out another secret. When I was so hungry for love, when you love me, it feels great. Oh, it feels so warm. And I'll tell you what, when I care what happens to you, feels exactly the way I thought you loving me would feel. I don't know why it happens that way, but when I care about you, that's when something happens inside of me and I grow spiritually. When I was here, I was bankrupt in all departments. Then you gave me a thimbleful of spirituality and you've helped me grow by new ideas that I've tried because I got no other choice. And the ability to accept has grown more and more as time has gone by. Now I wish I could tell I was perfect, and I am almost perfect, except when I'm not. You see, except when I'm not. I'm really a terrific AA member, except when I'm not. You see, I always work this program great, except when I don't, you see. And I get in my own way a lot. And it's got to be because, you see, there are some things that if I had, I wouldn't need to come back anymore, for one thing. Well, I mean, I'm already good. Well, I'm not here for you. You think I'm here for you? Well, being here for you makes me feel good. That's why I'm here for you. I don't know how you can interpret all that, except that I'm telling you that every time that I'm with you, I still feel wonderful. I continue to fall in love, and I thought, you know, one day at a time, I don't drink because I'm an alcoholic. One day at a time, I don't steal because my sponsor won't let me. I can justify anything, and she won't let me. And one day at a time, I don't get married because I don't know how to do it. There ain't no happiness after marriage. They turn into toads after I kiss them. So, because I continue to fall in love. And I started saving my money for my old age. I'll tell you, wonderful things have happened to me in this program, and also not so wonderful things. My sister, who had always been held as an example for me, for my mother, chose to take her life, and it was my destiny to be the one to find her. And I could not believe what was before my eyes, because death had never touched me that close. And I tried to 12-step my sister, and she didn't want what I had. She said, Angie, I was never as bad as you. So I know you can't see till you can see, and you can't hear till you can hear, and I can't save anybody. A newcomer, I'm not here to save you, to teach you, to give you nothing. I'm here to save, to share my life with you. I'm here to so that you can see that I am a walking, talking miracle that's up here because I am a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. Because I suit up, and show up. That's all I do. And I say, here I am, Lord, use me. I know today that God has given me a gift of communication, that I am God's melody of life, and he sings his song through me, and that I couldn't do anything to save anybody else. I'd have saved my sister. I'd have saved my daughter, who is sitting here. And I have another daughter. I have another daughter that has 7 months today, that for years I didn't know where she was at. And that is what's wonderful, because all the thorns are out of my heart, you see. God has been so merciful and so good to me that the ability to accept has increased in my sobriety. 2 weeks after my sister killed herself, I became a grandma. God, I love being a grandma. Of course, now they got bigger. Now they're not so impressed with their grandma. But when they were babies, they thought grandma and Santa Claus was the same thing. Now they just think they're supposed to get all that stuff. I had my, you know, they used to ask for little stuff. Now I ask them, what do you want? And I gasp. About a year ago, I asked, well, what do you want? And she says, a Nintendo. I said, sure, Grandma, get it for you. Did I gasp when I got to pay for it? You know, and so they don't ask for lollipops and little dolls anymore. And I'll tell you what, them little girls, I got one especially here when she was a baby. They were sent to Alaska. I was the only grandma sent to Alaska. And when she was a baby, I would fly to Alaska almost every other month, just so I could hear some little squeaky voice say, that's my grandma. Because I may have been a failure as a mother, but I'm a good grandma. I tell you, I got used to being alone, and I fell in love again. I don't even want to fall in love. I fall in love again with a newcomer. God, oh, Christ. If it offends any spiritual giants here, I want you to know it offended me. And I take him around my friends. You want to keep him hidden, you know, but yeah, take him around my friends, and they don't have no class, your friends do. They look at this guy and they say, is he one of us? They see his eyes still spinning. And you know what's coming next. So how long's she been sober? You go, And one of my friends, Frank Sloan from the Simi Valley, says, Jesus Christ, and you give that guy a break. So I go to my sponsor with my tears, and she says, Angie, he's a nice guy. Just tell him you scooped him in before somebody else did. And that's what I did. I'd run around and tell him, well, I just scooped him in before somebody else did. You know, I heard something else. If you're afraid somebody's going to find out something about you, tell them. And then you won't be afraid. Huh? That embarrassment will only last 2 seconds, but if you're afraid of telling them, do you know how long that eats you up? They eat your bacon up all the time. So now I don't care who I say to whom. And I've said pretty raunchy things to people, all kinds of people. And I tell you what, I moved to Blythe. God moved me to Blythe. And I thought I walked through the alfalfa fields, like walking through the tulips, and what it was is they weren't impressed with me in Blythe, and they weren't doing right in Blythe, so I taught them how to do it. And ran off a lot of people, but there's a lot of people that stay there. And today in Blythe, we work the steps and we follow the traditions. I took that oldest granddaughter to me to a conference once, and I had a big white blouse that covers a multitude of tortillas and beans. And I'm getting dressed, and that little girl look up at me and says, Grandma, you look just like the white angel. And I look at that shiny little face that looks up at me, and there's a something that goes between us. Because I saw me through her eyes. All she's ever seen is the loveliness and whiteness and the beauty that you've done with me. She's never had to see the ugliness of my life like her mother has, you see. I could have never done it for me. But I have come a long way from a dirty bedroom in Mira Loma because he has touched me. May he do the same for you. Thank you so much.